lacking of return guys. Speedy B finds a seam. Brandon Banks has some room. Look out! Banks near the 50 to the 40. Brandon Banks down near the 20. He's going to score! Touchdown! Oh my goodness!
Gable running away from defenders down the sideline.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
All right, Mike. This might be your final show, eh? You sent out a kind of a weird tweet last week. I have it right here. It says, "Hi, my name is Mike, and I love the Argos." What the hell were you thinking?
Well, that was a girlfriend hack job.
Is she an Argos fan?
No. She's a big Rough Riders fan.
Saskatchewan, not Ottawa?
No. She's an Eskimos fan.
Oh.
Bugging her. So I went on her phone to, use the Twitter tweet machine, and, she thought it'd be funny to, tweet that out because, lately I've been paying a lot of attention to the Argos with the sale, and she's been bugging me a lot because of, you know, I've been listening to everything I can about the Argos and watching all the videos on TSN and stuff, so she started bugging me that I'm a big Argo fan. So she thought it'd be funny. That's what happened. I'm not. I don't like the Argos. So.
Okay, so you're not converting.
No.
All right.
Just get that out of the way. I do not love the Argos.
Like we could change the format of the show and make it sort of a love hate thing if you really want to wear the double blue. Like I'm going to hold it against you, but I guess I won't fire you from the show.
No.
It's all good.
Yeah, it's all good. I just like to explain that, get that out of the way. You know, I'm not an Argo lover, but I will admit I do want them to do well because it's good for the league. So.
Off the field, yeah. Do well. Yes. On the field, I want them to lose every game, and I'm sure you're the same way. But off the field, I hope that they make millions and millions of dollars.
Exactly.
So you brought it up in your little description there of how you don't like the Argos about getting into the sale of the team. So let's get into that a little bit. The Argos were sold between the last episode and this episode. Actually, I think it was like just after the last episode was posted. The announcement came out. It might have been the day of that the Argos had been sold by David Braley to a group of Bell Media and Larry Tannenbaum. I guess we won't go too much into the sale because back on episode 5, which we posted on March 30th, we sort of had an inkling that this was going to happen, and it just never ended up coming to fruition at the time. But it's finally official. It's massive news. The team is no longer – well, I guess after this season will no longer be under Braley's ownership. And the big one is they're moving to BMO in 2016.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I mean, I like to call them Tannenbell, their combo. You know, they have tons of money.
Hashtag Tannenbell. We got to get the hashtags going.
Hashtag Tannenbell. I have tons of money behind them, so there should be, you know, a lot of marketing of the team. Like, you know, they weren't exactly marketed very well with David Braley for a long time. And just to get out of the Sky Dome is huge for them. I mean, they've been the talk of the league for years and years about how they should get out of the Sky Dome. You know, when they first moved there, I guess it was because they wanted to get away from the mistake on the lake, the exhibition stadium, but you know, times change, and it's good to see them get back to an outdoor venue, a small outdoor venue.
I'm like super excited about this. I go to a lot of the Argos Ticats games, being that I live an hour away, and like the Sky Dome sucks. Don't get me wrong. The only really positive thing about it is when it's freezing cold outside. I guess you're inside and it's nice and warm. But that to me is not a good enough reason to stay there. Obviously, they can't stay there, but moving to BMO, like an outdoor facility that's modern, like Sky Dome was built in 1989, I believe, is when it opened. BMO's like nearly brand new. With all the renovations going on, it'll essentially be brand new. Even though we both hate the Argos, we were both very excited about this move.
Exactly. When you said that it opened in 1980, have you ever seen the opening ceremonies that are on YouTube with the Sky Dome?
No.
Oh my God, it's like the cheesiest thing you'll ever watch. You got to check that out sometime.
Is it pure 80s?
Oh, it's so 80s.
Okay. Okay, so maybe...
You know, it's almost 90s, like it's 89, but it's like the cheesiest thing you've ever seen. It's on YouTube, you get a chance.
It's on YouTube? Maybe. You know what? I think I'll have to go find that and we'll post that... Post it on the post where we put the episode up on 3 Down Nation.
Yeah, it's horrific.
Now I have to see it if you say it's that bad.
Oh, my God.
Speaking of bad, as much as we're excited about the Argos moving into a brand new stadium, there is a group out there who have just made themselves look like complete idiots. And I'm, of course, talking about fans of the MLS soccer franchise Toronto FC. I have had the unfortunate, I don't even know what word to use. It's just been, I've been dealing with these fools on the tweet machine, as you call it. They are just out of hand. It is like some of the things they're doing. Oh, we're going to wear black shirts. Did you hear about some of them are returning season tickets? Like this is just, it's just getting stupid.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say about them. I mean, I'm sure there are reasonable TFC fans out there, but the ones that are idiots they're sure loud. I'll tell you that.
Well, and the thing is, they're still using that stupid "No Argos at BMO" hashtag. They're still holding their signs. The battle's over.
Yeah, it's done.
It's done. It's lost. The papers are signed. The Argos are moving in. Like, just give it up. Like, stop being a baby and share. Like, this is it's what it comes down to. It's like these kids, these fans were, as children, were just were they all only childs? And they just, well, we don't have to share. It's all ours. It's all ours. It was built. If you go and look at the council minutes, it was built with the idea that it be used for multiple sports, one of which being the CFL. I do not understand how these fools just don't understand that. And I don't even understand how they don't realize that everyone who's not them is pretty much laughing at them. Like, they're the laughingstock of the country right now with their childish antics. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you said it all right there. I mean, they've been, anti. I mean, just the way they've been handling themselves, it makes me really dislike the TFC. It makes me want them to keep losing and keep losing. Like, they haven't won. They haven't been in the playoffs since they've been in existence. But I just want that to keep continuing the way they've been acting.
Yeah, and it's like, I've never had anything against Major League Soccer or TFC in particular. I'm not a huge soccer fan. I'm more of a casual fan. I went to the women's friendly game at Tim Hortons Field last Friday, and it was awesome. I enjoy the game. It's a fun game to watch, and the way that these fans have been handling themselves, I'm with you. I want to see them lose every time out. I want to see their playoff drought extend 100 years. They've gotten to the point where I dislike them more than any other fan base, I think, in sports. Like, I hate them more than I hate Patriots fans and Red Sox fans and Riders fans. Like, these guys are just idiots. And it's – I don't know. I just – it's driving me nuts.
Yeah, they're not going to – I don't think they're going to stop anytime soon. I mean, I saw on your Twitter feed that they wanted to fight Argos fans or something.
Yeah, there's like, – I don't know. I
think we spent too much time on them already.
We probably have. This is a CFL podcast. This ain't a TFC podcast. If we want to talk about a bunch of losers, then we'll start one of those. But you know what? Forget it. The Argos are moving in. So any TFC fans out there that can't stand that, suck it up. Stop being a baby and deal with it.
You're still going to be able to watch your team.
Well, that's just like I said, I went to the women's game at Tim Hortons Field, and that's a dual purpose facility. There's going to be soccer games there. There's going to be football games there, obviously. And I didn't see either of those two squads complaining about the state of the field or anything like that. Those are two elite level national squads. The Canadian women's team is one of the best in the world. The English team is one of the best in the world, and they just went and played the game and. Stop worrying about things you can't control, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. It must have been nice to be back at Tim Hortons Field, though.
It was, and it was kind of nice to see it done.
Yeah.
My understanding is some of the things behind the scenes aren't all that finished, but it's nothing we could tell. Like, from the outside, from everything that fans will see, it's gorgeous. The best thing was sort of the front of the stadium. They're sort of a meeting place, and last year it was still under construction, and this year it's completely done. It's so wide open. There's no congestion. It's actually really spectacular, to be honest with you.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
All right. Sticking with the Argos, we're going to keep going here because you love them so much.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that sort of came up during Braley's tenure is that their starting quarterback, their head coach, and their general manager – are all in the final years of their contracts. I'm guessing that might have been due to Braley not wanting any sort of, maybe not Braley, but like, you know, you don't want to sort of go into as new owners with it handcuffed by having guys already picked for you to play or to coach or to manage or whatever. So what do you think sort of the sale means for those guys? You think all three will be back? You think one will be back? You think none will be back? What's your sort of thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a good thing for them. I mean, it can only be positive. to make them want to re-sign. I'm not sure if all of them will be back or how many will be back, but, you know, they're all quality pieces to a team. I mean, Scott Milanovich is a great coach. Jim Barker seems to find talent every year. And Ricky Ray, you know, one of the best QBs in the league, if not the best. I'm not sure how old Ricky Ray is now, and I wonder about, I think, I'm not sure if you mentioned Chad Owens too. I think he's in the last year of his contract as well. And maybe even Andre Dury too. So those are like a lot of big pieces for the Argos. I think that there'll be some pull to come back to the team since they'll want to play at that new stadium. And since they've been with the team quite a while now. So I think that most of them will be back just to, just because there's brighter pastures ahead.
Well, there was all that talk last season that Milanovic was leaving after last year because of the uncertainty. But I think if they all want to stay, I think the team brings them all back. I think it's kind of a no-brainer, honestly. As you said, Ray is one of, if not the best quarterback in the CFL. I think Milanovic is a great head coach. I think he's done wonders there. I know that you could sort of say that they've gotten worse every year under his stewardship. They were Grey Cup champs his first year. They lost in the East Finals second year, and they missed the playoffs last year. But I still think he can coach. And Barker, I'm not a big fan of. I've said that time and time again. He's not a bad general manager. I'm just not huge on him. I'm glad he's not Hamilton's GM, frankly. But again, for what the Argos do, I think he's in a good spot for them. Like one of his strengths is that he can find unknown talent and get them to Toronto. And that is sort of an underrated quality in a general manager. They've had a bunch of guys come in who you never heard of before and end up being like really good players. What's his name? The defensive end from last year, whose name I always screw up, Okapalaugo or whatever.
Yeah.
No one knew who he was heading into last season, and he was one of the best defensive ends in the entire CFL. So I think all of them stay. And if Owens and Dury's contracts are up, I think they'll probably stay too, unless they're looking for just way too much money and the team can't afford them. But I can't see that being the case. I think they all like being in Toronto. And like you said, with a new stadium coming, it's probably going to be a good time to want to sign on with the double blue.
Yeah. I mean, American players will probably want to come to Toronto now if they have a stadium packed with fans, hey, Toronto, as we do, it's the biggest city in Canada. It's the biggest metropolitan, so I can see a lot of players wanting to come there if they're playing in front of fans and their organization is together and working well,
Agreed. Okay, so one last bit of Argo news before we can kind of move away from them, sort of.
Argo podcast we got going on here.
Yeah. Maybe I'm the one who's turned into a fan. That's not even funny. That almost made me sick to my stomach. I think it was like a day later after they bought the team, Larry Tannenbaum was out and about talking somewhere and says that the NFL to Toronto will happen eventually. Obviously, he's been one of the big proponents of trying to get an NFL team in Toronto for a very, very long time. I think he's out of his mind. I don't see any reason why the NFL would come to Toronto. I view sort of Toronto wanting an NFL team in the same way that Hamilton wants an NHL team, in that you can kind of use it as leverage against the place where you are now. It's like, oh, if you don't give us a new arena or a new stadium to play in, we're going to move to Hamilton. Or if you don't give us this, we're going to move to Toronto. And I just think we should throw some cold water on that. For anyone who's out there who's worried, I don't see the NFL coming to Toronto anytime soon. If they do, I think it'll be when we're old men and it won't matter anymore. The CFL will already be established and sustained. And because that's the big thing that we got to get out of this whole Argo sale, is that this sort of makes it to the point where all 9 teams are now solid. I guess Braley still wants to sell the Lions, but you look at it now and the CFL, I think, is starting to enter a golden age. And I think that's what we should be focusing on. And I think that's what Tannenbaum should be focusing on more than trying to figure out a way to get the NFL up to Toronto.
Yeah, it just never ends. It never will end. There'll always be media talking about the NFL to Toronto. It's no matter what. And I think you're right that it's not coming anytime soon. I think it won't be in our lifetimes, or we'll be old and gray, like you said. I mean, you got to build a stadium that's going to be close to $1 billion, right?
Yep.
Expansion fees. I don't know how much they're charging for an NFL team, you know. How much did the Bills sell for? $1 billion something?
Something close to that.
Yeah, so there's like $2 billion right there. I mean, that's a lot of money. There's just so much that has to happen. And the American TV, they don't get any benefit from a team in Canada. You know what I mean? So the TV contracts. So there's just so much that needs to happen before an NFL team comes. And it's been talked about for so long. I'm so sick of it. But, yeah, I don't see it happening anytime soon.
All right. So enough about the NFL. Let's move on to the CFL and let's talk about the Grey Cup. The Grey Cup is apparently going to be contested in Toronto in 2016. And this kind of has Hamiltonians and Ticat fans in a stink. The belief is that 2016 should have been here. Maybe that's a little bit of a stretch to believe that Hamilton should have hosted the Cup. But that seems to be sort of the prevailing feeling, is that with a new stadium and with Bob Young having been owner for so long and suffered loss after loss after loss after loss monetarily, that rewarding him a Grey Cup would be sort of the icing on the cake and something that he sort of deserves, which I agree with. But I don't really see the big problem with Toronto hosting in 16. Like, as a Hamiltonian, I can get to Toronto. And I think if that was what was needed to sort of sustain the NFL, or the CFL, sorry. Oh my God, that was a big mistake. In Toronto, then it was worth it.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, you're right, it's so close. And I just, you know, it's funny that I think John Tory said a couple months ago that kind of let the cat out of the bag that Toronto was getting the 2016 Grey Cup, and then he did it again at the Argos press conference. He said something about the Argos winning the Grey Cup at home in 2016, and then Jeffrey Orridge, the commissioner, was asked about it, and he said, oh, we're not talking about that right now. So that was kind of funny. But, yeah, whatever makes the Argos profitable, you know, that's fine. The only question I have is if it's going to be at BMO or is it going to be at the Skydome?
It sounds like, from everything I'm reading, that's going to be at BMO.
That makes sense.
I understand. Like, I remember when it was first sort of floated a few months ago that it was, the idea was Toronto would get in 2016 because it'd be the last time that they could host at the Dome. But with the Argos moving in 2016, then I don't see it any being anywhere else but BMO. But the weird thing about doing it at BMO is the reason that it wasn't in Winnipeg last year was because they said that they needed, you know, time to get the kinks out of the stadium and what have you. This renovation that's going to be sort of retrofitting a CFL field into BMO field is pretty much going to be ending in 2016. Like, they won't have had time to work out the kinks. Now, maybe, I guess, because it's an older stadium, like it's not a brand new place, they'll, all the things that sort of hampered Winnipeg's bid last year won't be an issue. But it still seems kind of weird to me that they would maybe not wait a while, maybe give the 2016 game to Edmonton or something, and then maybe 28. I don't know. It just seems like maybe it's a little bit rushed.
I'd like to see it in Hamilton soon, but I think I was listening to Drew Edwards. He did a radio hit. I forget which station it was, but he was saying that, you know, you don't just get tossed to Grey Cup. You have to put together a team to bid for it and stuff. So I just tell Tiger fans that are really peeved about it to, you know, it's going to be all right. I think they'll be getting a Grey Cup very soon, maybe in the next 3 to 4 years. I don't think it's going to be in 2017, but maybe the year after that.
Yeah, 2017 to me has got to be Ottawa. It just makes too much sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's the 150th anniversary of Confederation, and to do it anywhere else, I think, would be kind of a disservice. You could sort of cap off a year of celebrations by having the Grey Cup, because it's at the end of November, so it's essentially the end of the year. and it's before Christmas, so people sort of be into it. But yeah, you can kind of cap off all those sesquicentennial celebrations in Ottawa by having the Grey Cup there.
Exactly.
So moving on to other CFL news, the Montreal Alouettes made another big signing, picking up Michael Sam, mostly known because he is the first openly gay football player to play in the NFL, even though it was only in the preseason, and now he's obviously the first openly gay football player to play in the CFL. I don't really care one way or another about his sexual orientation. That's just the story that's being... It's a big deal because he's the first. But my thing is, can he play? And having watched some of his stuff while he was at Missouri, he was the SEC Defensive Player of the Year, and he's a pretty decent pass rusher. He's got... I always thought he had the size and sort of the speed and everything to play defensive end in the CFL more than in the NFL. So I think the Owls, if they can get out of him what they hope to get out of him, I think it's a pretty good signing.
Yeah, he did pretty well in the preseason games he played in with the Rams. I think he led the league in the preseason with sacks. So, I mean, yeah, like you said, he's SEC co-defensive player of the year in 2013. You know, they're going to use him to rush the quarterback. I saw a certain former defensive tackle for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers sent out a tweet. He's a media person now. I won't name names. Let's just call him Bug Frown. He said, nice to see the Alouettes signing players just for their name or something to that extent, you know, sarcastic tweet. And I don't see it like that. I mean, the way he played in college, he was a great college player. You know, they're bringing him in to give him a look. So I don't see it just for the name's sake. You know, he could be a great player in the CFL. And the last time I checked, this is a sports business. You know, they want to sell tickets, so that probably will help them sell tickets too. But I don't think it was solely just because he's the first openly gay player and he's somewhat of a celebrity, you know?
No, I agree. If he can't contribute, he won't be on the team. It's as simple as that. Troy Smith was a pretty big name, former Heisman Trophy winner with the Ohio State Buckeyes, and they gave him the reins to the team, and when he couldn't hack it, they got rid of him. Sam would be the same way. I don't see them bringing him in if he's not going to contribute. They have brought too many players in this offseason to try to compete and win the Grey Cup. They have loaded up on veteran players, especially at the receiver position. They are looking to make a run at the Ticats, and they are looking to get back to the big game. So I don't see this as just a name signing. He has been on Montreal's negotiation list, as far as I understand, for quite some time. Was very close to signing a deal last year, just before the playoffs, to come to Montreal, but wanted to check out his sort of NFL options before he sort of gave the CFL a shot, because he's got a two-year commitment. Obviously, being a first-year player, he has to sign a 1+1 as opposed to veteran players who can only sign for 1 year. So he's made a 2 year commitment to the CFL. I don't see it as like, yeah, okay, he has a big name and like he was on Dancing with the Stars, and I'm sure we're going to get incessantly hit with facts we don't care about when Rod Black calls one of his games. But again, if he doesn't perform, he won't be on the squad anymore. I think it's just as simple as that.
Yeah. Like, I see the Chad Johnson signing more of a publicity stunt than this one.
So yeah.
I don't know what his status is either with the Alouettes. I heard that Jim Popp said in an interview that he doesn't expect him to come to camp. So I guess he's now going to be with the squad this year.
It seemed like he came up here last year, wanted to play, and now sort of realized he's an older player and just maybe hasn't informed the club, which would be kind of a crappy move, in my opinion, but it seems like his football career is over.
Yeah.
And the thing with, like, you know, certain member of the Winnipeg media saying that he was signed just as a name, he's not the first player to ever come from the NFL or to be a big name player to sign in the CFL. Like Rocket Ishmael is maybe a great, maybe the prime example. He spurned the NFL to sign with the Argos back in 91, and it was because he was a huge name. Now, I say that as a huge Notre Dame fan, and I love the Rocket, but he was a big player. So he's not – like to say that Sam signed simply because he's a name I think is a bit disingenuous on what do you call him? Plug Sound or whatever. I can't remember what name he said. On Doug, I'm going to say his name. On Doug Brown's part, I think he's – maybe he's saying these things simply just to – rile people up because that's what guys do nowadays. I don't know. But like, Ricky Williams signed up here. That to me was a bigger publicity stunt than Michael Sam. Doug Flutie was a Heisman Trophy winner and spent years in the NFL. Was BC signing him a publicity stunt? He went on to become, in my opinion, the greatest player in CFL history. So we live in a world now where I think we react too quickly to things like this, and saying that Sam was only signed as a celebrity name is kind of, I'm not going to say putting the cart before the horse, but let's see him play first before we can say. If he comes up and he sucks and he, you know, plays in six games and has one tackle and no sacks and gets no pressure on the quarterback, then yeah, you like, okay, and he's still on the team after that, yeah, then he was signed simply to sell tickets and jerseys. But let's wait until he plays a few games. Let's wait until at least he plays an exhibition game or attends a practice before we start writing him off as a bust or a guy who is simply signed because, you know, he's a celebrity. It's just too much.
Well, he wasn't signed because he was on Dancing with the Stars. And he's signed because he's a good football player and Jim Pop wants to get a look at him. I mean, that's what GMs do, right? They try to get the best players that they can. So, you know, Bob Brown tweeting that out like that is just ridiculous in my opinion.
Yeah. More CFL news. We can move on from Michael Sam. This kind of took me by surprise, is that the CFL signed a TV contract extension with TSN. I don't know if you really see that all that much. I'm not really all that up on television contracts and sports. It's not exactly my area of expertise or even an area of interest. But it seemed to me strange because they just signed a new deal not 2 years ago, maybe even a year ago, I believe. So to see sort of them recommit to TSN for 3 years longer was kind of a shock to me.
Yeah, I find it kind of odd too. So they signed a 3-year extension, which takes them to 2021. I was thinking maybe since Bell bought the Argos, maybe it's part of the deal to buy the Argos that the CFL extend the deal with Bell / TSN for another 3 years. I would like to know how much money. I don't know if it's probably the same money that they signed for till 2018 and then a bit more from 18 to 21. I'm sure that'll come in to play when they do the next CBA. A deal means that, Rogers / Sportsnet will continue to ignore the league and trash it. I like it. I think TSN does a great job. I would like to see TSN step up their game just a little bit with the coverage of the league. You know, I heard they're doing some new stuff this year, which I will be interested to see. I think they're getting a new lead-in song for Friday Night Football, which...
Oh, thank Lord.
I know. I don't like the one they did last year. It's so much like the Sunday Night Football NFL.
Yeah, like that, a country twangy type.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan when they made. I remember they made a big deal about it, and I heard it for the first time. I was like, nah, maybe it's just not me. And obviously, this is nitpicking because, like, as you say, their presentation of the game, the fact that they show every game is awesome. But yeah, some of the little things maybe need to be tweaked a little to make this sort of a little bit better.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know, change up the play-by-play in color every once in a while, you know, give it a little different spice. I don't know. But we'll see what happens. I'm glad they re-signed TSN. Overall, they do a good job of promoting the league and doing the games.
I completely agree with you. There is one other aspect that kind of sort of bugs me about TSN's presentation, is that a few years ago they decided to start airing preseason games, and I think the first year they did it, they had like 6 of the 8 games on TV, and it was awesome because – before, you'd have to either listen to the radio or be fortunate enough to actually go to the game to see preseason action. And I know a lot of people don't really care about preseason football, but I kind of like to get a look at maybe some of the guys who are on the bubble or guys that we don't know who, you know, have a really good game, and we can sort of like, oh, maybe this guy can step up. But this year they're only showing three. And I'm hoping with this new sort of contract extension that maybe they'll get into showing more preseason games again in the future. I understand that this is a pretty busy summer for sports in Canada. Like, the Women's World Cup is just about to start, and I know TSN is a huge shower of that, so that could have had an impact on the amount of preseason games they were available to show. But yeah, I would like to see more preseason football. You don't have to show them all, and maybe I just really want to see the Ticat ones, even though I get to go to one every year being a season ticket holder. So yeah, if they could find a way to maybe put the preseason games again, they have five channels, and I know not every region gets all five channels. I don't think any region gets all five channels. I know here we get two, like TSN 2 and TSN 4. But use those channels as sort of your like regional coverage. And you know, in Ontario, put the Argos preseason games, the Ticats preseason games, and the Red Blacks preseason games on whatever the local TSN is here. I just wish, again, I just want to watch more football. I want to watch as much football as possible, preseason, postseason, regular season. I don't care. So, yeah, TSN, I really wish they would sort of step up, show more preseason games.
Yeah, I'd like to see that too. You know, like you said, it's good to see, you know, the young players, you know, see who could be the future or see who could make the team as a surprise, you know. Yeah, like three, I'd like to see at least, you know, half of them. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like even, you know, four or five, I don't know. Three isn't enough.
No, I agree. Three is not enough. And especially this year, they're playing a whole bunch of them in not necessarily neutral site places, but places outside of the regular cities. Like Fort McMurray is getting a game. BC, I think, is playing there at the UBC Stadium. It would be good sort of publicity for those places to get to see their names on TV. And, you know, maybe UBC can attract more football players to play for their program if they're a game that's played in their stadium is televised nationally on TSN or even regionally to like the west of Manitoba or whatever. There seems to be a sort of a dearth in preseason coverage, and it kind of does make it hard to sort of see those guys and who they play. But with these neutral site games and these different stadium games, I think that would be a great way to sort of, I think that doing them the team wise is a great way to sort of expand the game. And I think it'd be a great way, if they're shown on TV, to sort of get more fans involved, knowing that, you know, you can be an Eskimos fan and not necessarily have to live in Edmonton, or you can be an Alouettes fan and not necessarily have to live in Montreal. I think it would be a great way to expand the audience.
Yeah, I agree. More preseason games, please.
All right. So enough CFL news. Let's get in some Tiger Cat talk. The team had a conference call, as all teams do during the run-up to training camp and into the preseason and what have you. And one of the interesting points that was made by Scott Mitchell. And he said that this year, with a full season at Tim Hortons Field, the Ticats will make money for the first time in nearly four decades. You're younger than I am, and I'm not even four decades old. So in our entire lifetimes, the Ticats have never made money. So this is a pretty significant step forward for the franchise.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive that, you know, this team actually still exists after four decades of losing money. I mean, think of how much money they've lost over the years. How many owners have lost money over the years to keep the team alive. It's pretty extraordinary, and I'm stoked that they're actually going to make a profit. You know, I'm happy for Bob Young and everyone that's put in work to make this team profitable finally. You know, the new stadium is obviously a big part of that. The new TV deal probably helps a lot. So, I mean, hallelujah.
You'll spit it out eventually. Yeah. Hallelujah, yeah. Indeed.
Hallelujah. There we go.
Yeah.
You can laugh at me if you want, people listening. So I'm overjoyed that this team is finally making money.
Well, all that making money means that this team's not going anywhere. And like, it didn't go anywhere for 40 years when it was losing money, but now sports is a business, and as much as we like to think of it as just a game, the Ticats needed to become profitable at some point. because Bob Young's not going to be around forever, and he's famous for saying he doesn't want he always wanted to buy this team and get it to a point where the next guy does not have to be someone who just wants a charity case. We are so lucky to have him as owner. We have been lucky to have him as owner for 10 years now, and he wants to hand off the team eventually to someone who can then make money. And the idea that the team will finally make that money and Bob Young will see some of that is I'm happy for the man because of all he's done for the city and for the team.
Yeah. And I know that Scott Mitchell's got a lot of crap over the years from fans. But I believe it was Drew Edwards that wrote a piece that said that, you know, let's give some credit to Scott Mitchell for turning this thing around, and I'm happy for him as well.
Same here, same here. So enough of the business side for a second. Let's move on to the on-field product. The Ticats made some roster moves since the last time we sat down and recorded one of these bad boys, and you have a list of players that are here and are now gone. So fire those off, if you will.
All right. Ticat signings, we got defensive tackle Drake Nevis. He's 6'2", 285 pounds. He's a third-round draft pick in the NFL by the Colts. Spent some time with San Diego, Dallas, the Jaguars, the Panthers. Went to college at Louisiana State. He's first-team All-American. First-team All-Southeastern Conference, and he's 26 years old. We got Ray Holly, he's running back. 6'2", 200 pounds. Went to college at Louisiana Tech. He's 24 years old. Got Stephen Milham. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. I'm not sure, though. Offensive lineman. 6'5", 215.
Hold on. Offensive lineman, 6'5", 215?
Yeah.
That's got to be a typo.
Yeah.
I weigh more than 215. That's got to be 315. That has to be a typo.
Yeah, it could be 315.
Has to be. An offensive lineman at 215, holy crap, that's a small offensive lineman.
Yeah, that's true, actually. but anyways, he went to college at Massachusetts. Minutemen was their name of their team, I guess.
Oh, UMass.
Yeah. Five different positions at O-line. He played five different positions at O-line. He was with the Jaguars in 2013. 24 years old. I got Kevin Henry, offensive lineman as well, 6'4", 299. Played in 42 games for Central Michigan. Sedaris Bryant, linebacker, 5'9", 220. Three seasons at Ole Miss, led the team with 78 tackles in 2013, 23 years old. Bobby Felder, defensive back, 6 feet, 200 pounds. Played with the Bills in 2014. Played at Nichols State. Led the team with 5 interceptions and 8 pass breakups. Antoine Lewis, defensive back, 185 pounds. Played 12 games with Purdue in 2013, 23 years old. Crenshaw Page, defensive back, 179 pounds. Played in 23 games for Boise State. And then we got the Ticat releases. National linebacker, Powell Kruba. International running back Jeff Scott, international defensive back Drayton Calhoun, international defensive back Arthur Williams, and international defensive back Michael Coe. And that's it.
Well, you did miss one of the releases, and it's one I'm going to talk about because it's one that makes me look like a giant moron. Defensive back Ellis Langster was also released in that group of defensive backs. And if we roll the tape back from last time we sat down, I was the genius who picked him to start week one at Delvin Bro's old spot. So I guess this makes me a giant, giant moron and proves once again that I have no idea what I'm talking about.
That's right, guys. It's all a guessing game. I mean, this just in, about an hour ago, the Ticats signed defensive end Paul Hazel. He appeared in 4 games with the New York Giants last season and 13 games with the Cleveland Browns 2013. So, 6'5", 227. So, there's a little breaking news for you on the podcast.
Cool. I don't really, like, again, a lot of these guys are probably, I don't want to say camp bodies because there are probably some pretty good football players, and one or two of them might surprise and make the team, and could be guys that we're talking about 6 weeks from now that are stars on the team and making plays. And like Delvin Bro is my go-to. He was an absolute unknown when he came up here 2 years ago, and 2 years later he leaves as a CFL All-Star, probably the best short side corner in the entire league last year, and now he's making that bank with the New Orleans Saints. So like, we're never going to see Bro again, but maybe one of these guys could turn into Bro at their position. Who knows?
Yeah, like with Bro, yeah, I mean, he didn't even go to he didn't even play university football, I don't believe.
No, because of the neck injury.
So he was a complete unknown except for like his high school stuff. So yeah, you never know with these so-called, you know, no-name, unrecognized players that they could be the next star. So you never know.
And their star will shine a little brighter on sort of a new day here in Hamilton, where Oldies 1150 CKOC will soon be rebranded as TSN Radio 1115. Just last week, the Ticats and Bell Media announced that an all-talk sports radio will be coming to the Hammer, and they will be the exclusive radio broadcasters of the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't expect that to happen. Seeing, you know, the TSN has a lot of radio stations across the country. You got Winnipeg, Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, Edmonton, Ottawa. But the similarity between all those cities is they have an NHL team and a CFL team. And Toronto has NBA and Major League Baseball, obviously. So I didn't expect Hamilton to get an all-talk radio station because, well, they have CFL. And I guess, well, they had AHL now that Bulldogs are gone, but now
OHL. Yeah.
So I guess there's going to be a lot of Ticats talk, which I'm pretty pumped about. And I guess they will, you know, they'll probably have some syndicated stuff from the States, or maybe there'll be a lot of, you know, some Maple Leafs talk and stuff like that. But overall, I'm pretty pumped about, because, you know, CHML did a good job, but I felt like there wasn't enough Ticats talk. You know, they had the Ticats show once a week, but, you know, now it'll be a daily thing. We'll be able to listen to Ticats talk on the radio.
Yeah, I agree. I think CHML was a good home for the team, but like you said, there was something lacking in coverage. And that's probably just due to finances, frankly. There's just not enough really to go around, and maybe just not enough sort of news to warrant a daily show. It's going to be interesting with TSN 1150 how they're going to sort of incorporate Hamilton-only stuff, because from now until the OHL season starts, which I am woefully in the dark about. I don't have any idea when that starts. I know it just ended. The season just ended. The Oshawa Generals won the Memorial Cup, but I'm not really big into hockey or junior hockey or anything like that, so I'm not all that knowledgeable about when the season starts. But for a long time, the Cats are going to be sort of the only game in town, so I'm kind of curious as to how they're going to fill hours of Hamilton-centric coverage with just the Ticats. I'm sure they will. They'll find a way. And like you said, they'll probably have some syndicated stuff, maybe some stuff from Toronto, some stuff from the States. But yeah, more Ticat talk is good for me.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is there, you know, new play-by-play guy for the Ticats, which Rick Zamprin did for a couple of years. I think, I'm not sure. Do you know how long he's been doing it?
I don't know off the top of my head. It's been a while. It's been quite some time that he's been sort of the voice of the Ticats on CHML. So,
and Coach Sal.
Yeah.
So they will be missed.
They will be missed. I actually really enjoyed like Rick's calls, and I really enjoyed him hosting the Ticats show as well. I think he's, you know, knowledgeable guy. I didn't listen to a lot of Ticats on the radio because if I was either at the game when it was here or I was watching on TSN, so wasn't so much into the radio stuff, but I did listen rather religiously to the Ticats show, and yeah, his voice hopefully will be maintained. I know he's been at some of the training camp practices that started yesterday, so it looks like he's still going to have a role in covering the Ticats, even though it won't be as big as it was before. And that's a good thing for me because I really like Rick.
Yeah. CHML did it for a good 40 years. So it's going to be different listening to the game. Well, yeah, I not necessarily listening to the games a lot, but getting a lot of coverage from the TSN feed.
Indeed, indeed. And our sort of last bit of Ticat news of the week is the recent retirement of special teams ace Mark Beswick. This came as a little surprise to me. I don't know how you felt about it, but I wasn't really expecting it. Never really heard any rumblings that he was considering retiring, but apparently this had been in the works for quite some time and actually makes drafting all those linebackers make a lot more sense. But Beswick was the 2013 East Division nominee for most outstanding defense or special teams player, which to me is phenomenal for a guy who is essentially a tackling machine. Usually you see returners or kickers receive those nominations and those awards, but for Beswick to get it, I think that's kind of a crowning achievement for his career. And he always seemed like a pleasant guy. I had the privilege of talking to him a couple times at those sort of like meet the Ticats things that they do, and always seemed very nice with fans and very cordial, a little quiet, but you know, he's not really a superstar player, so he wasn't really used to people sort of lavishing attention on him, but I wish him luck in retirement.
Yeah, 7 seasons in the league, 6 with the Ticats. He's tied with Rob Hitchcock for all-time franchise lead in special teams tackles with 123. So,
not a bad name to be listed with.
No, not at all.
You go out of the league sharing a record with a guy who I think should be in the Hall of Fame and Rob Hitchcock. You've fed yourself quite the career.
Yeah, he led the league in special teams tackles in 2011 with 27 and 2013 with 24. So, you know, I'm assuming he's a leader on special teams. So, and a great special teams player. So he will be missed from the Ticats.
If I'm not mistaken, was he not the guy that scored the fake field goal touchdown in Moncton a couple years ago?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I saw that. I was at that game, and yeah, it was a surprising play, and it was exciting to watch for sure.
Wasn't that essentially? I don't want to say it was the only touchdown the Cats scored, but that was a pretty low scoring game, if I'm not mistaken, and that was kind of a turning point that helped them win that game.
Yeah, they. I remember it being somewhat of a low-scoring game, and that they caught the Alouettes off guard for sure, and it was a nice little flick play to Beswick, and he ran it in.
So he'll always have that. He'll always have the special teams award, and I think I speak for all Ticat fans, yourself included, and we wish him the best in whatever he chooses to do in the future.
Absolutely.
So I guess it's time to sort of end this dealy with the same way we end it every week, and that is taking some questions from our audience. Fire away, buddy.
Alright. Any tips on attending a game at Tim Hortons Field? Anything that's a must see? And where are the best seat values? That comes from USFL Tecmo on Twitter.
Okay, so you haven't attended a game at Tim Hortons Field, so I guess I will do all the talking on this one. I can't really say if there's any tips on attending games. My recommendation on seats would be to sit on the east side of the stadium. I've sat on both the east and west side. My season tickets are on the west side, but the east side of the stadium is a little lower, even at the very top, than the top of the west side. So if you're looking to be a little closer to the action, I would say sit on the east side. The one down side to sitting on that side is if the sun is out, it can be in your eyes a little bit. Anything that's a must see?
Football game?
Well, yeah, the football game for sure. For sure. That's definitely something you want to make sure you catch. Maybe head over to Scott Park and mingle with some of the fans and do a little tailgating. I've been over there a couple times myself, and it can be pretty fun. I'm not much of a social guy, so I'm not really – I'm not a guy you're going to kind of meet and we're going to have a spark up a giant conversation. But yeah, head over to Scott Park. Maybe hit up some of your Ticat buddies on the old tweet machine and see if you can sort of find a meeting place. You know, Sort of anything. Like the stadium is really built to be social. There's, as I said earlier, there's a gigantic sort of meeting area outside the stadium in front. There's just tons of open space to mingle. So I guess, yeah, that would sort of be my little, you know, piece of information regarding Tim Hortons Field. It's hard because, again, before I attended the women's soccer game, the stadium wasn't done, so it was kind of hard to sort of give an impression on it or tell you what to do. But, yeah, those would be my tips there.
Awesome. At Tio Benfica, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but what's your thoughts on rotating the Labor Day Classic between the two cities now that the Argos have a new home?
You want to take this one?
Yeah, I don't like I like the idea of keeping the Labor Day Classic in Hamilton. I wouldn't mind seeing opening day game be Toronto and Hamilton every year in Toronto, and then maybe Thanksgiving game in Toronto as well, and keeping the Labor Day Classic in Hamilton because it's been there for so many years. That's my thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think the Labor Day Classic should absolutely stay in Hamilton. Yeah, there should be sort of a special secondary game for the Cats and Argos. Obviously, every year they're not going to play three times. I think sometimes they're only going to play twice. This year they play them three times, and it's on the Civic Holidays or Simcoe Day here in Ontario, and you have the Labor Day game, and you have the following Friday or Saturday, I can't remember which one, where they lock horns again. I sort of like the back-to-back games with Labor Day in Hamilton and then the Labor Day rematch of, later in the week. I think that's sort of, if they can keep that, I would be happy. But yeah, moving the Labor Day Classic to Toronto just because they have a new stadium, I'm not saying that they don't deserve it. I just think it's here. So you're like, you don't hear about them moving the Labor Day game or the Labor Day weekend game in the Saskatchewan-Winnipeg rivalry or in the Battle of Alberta. They it's played in the same place every year, and then you play the rematch the following week in the opposing team stadium. And I think that makes for some great, intense rivalries because you get right back at it. You get to have – you play each other on Monday, and then you're right back at it the following Friday or Saturday. I think that's the way to go in the future. Stick with that formula. I think it works.
Yeah, I like the two in Toronto, one in Hamilton. You know, get the – you know, because the Tiger Cat fans travel pretty well, so pack their stadium twice a year.
Well, I know that whenever Hamilton plays Toronto at BMO for the first time, and I'm really hoping that it is the opener of 2016, I am going to be there. So
now that's a must, you'd think, for the schedule makers to make it Toronto-Hamilton in the first game at BMO.
To me, if you want to sort of get that vibe and get that, like, oh my God, this is finally an important place to be, that would be, because you would have, you know, 15 to 20,000 Argo fans, and then the rest would be filled with Tiger Cat fans. That place would be bumping.
Yeah, you get that vibe going, you know, make people say, hey, that was a really good time. There was a lot of atmosphere there, and I want to come back. So that's a no-brainer.
I think you're almost automatically guaranteed a sold-out crowd for that first game if it's the Cats and the Argos. So, if BMO doesn't open with the Ticats playing the Argos, then someone screwed something up along the way.
Yeah. All right, next question is from Brad2332. Is Mazzoli a lock for backup quarterback, or has the bad performances the last two seasons cost him?
Oh, the bad performances have definitely cost him. I think to start the season, I could see him being the number two just based on the fact that he's the only guy with playing experience amongst all the quarterbacks who aren't Zach Caleros. But by the end of the season, I would not be shocked, or even by midway through the season, if Harris or Matthews had overtaken him for second. He just looked atrocious in those games he played last year. I don't look at him as sort of a future starter on any team, let alone the Ticats. So I don't say cut bait with him because he does have sort of a veteran presence and he kind of knows the game, but no, I don't think he has anywhere near a lock on the number two quarterback job.
Yeah, he's not a lock for sure. I'd keep an eye out for Jeff Matthews just because of Ken Austin's history with him and Tommy Condell's history with him. So I'd look for him to be maybe the backup quarterback at some, maybe not at first, but he might jump up the depth chart at some point this season.
The thing with Matthews that I won't say concerns me, but is sort of a little bit of a negative on his part is that he's not very mobile. He's much more of a stand there, throw kind of quarterback, drop back passer. I would compare him, like, style wise, not at all anywhere in any other fashion to Danny Mack. But the thing that Danny Mack had was one of the quickest releases I've ever seen in a quarterback, north or south of the border. So if Matthews is not going to be a very mobile player, he's going to have to develop a like lightning quick release. So it'll be interesting to see sort of how the QB battle shapes up in training camp. But yeah, I think Matthews, if he can sort of show the poise that he can have and sort of develop a faster release, I think, yeah, he's the guy that I would be I would be putting my money on to be the number two QB at some point this season.
Yeah. All right. As Mike Destructs asks, realistically, when do you think the Hamilton will get a Grey Cup? I'm going to say, Winnipeg this year, Toronto 2016, Ottawa 17, and Hamilton 2018.
Yep. Same here. I don't see any reason why it can't be Hamilton in 2018. So I know people will complain that it'll be in the East 3 years in a row, but six of the last seven have been in the West, and it's, you know, just the way it is. I wish there was a rotation where it could go back and forth every year, but that's not the case. So, yeah, I think 2019 at the absolute latest, but yeah, I would say 2018 is not a lock, obviously, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
All right, last question comes from Oski Eddie. Which rookie do you think has a chance to crack the starting lineup?
We could see a rookie fill in for Bro, one of the DBs that no one has any idea about right now. But if I was to sort of place a bet, I'd say maybe one of those receivers, Underwood or Tolliver, could be. Tolliver was working with the first team offense at camp yesterday. Underwood was apparently working with the first team offense today, filling in for Brandon Banks, who, as we've discussed previously, probably won't be an every down receiver because of what he does in special teams. So yeah, give me one of those rookies. I think one of them will definitely be in the starting lineup come week one in Calgary.
Yeah, I got Underwood as well. I just have a feeling about Underwood that he might be in the lineup. And I was reading, Tolliver was doing the first team lineups. And I just want to say that I also read that Figueroa was at left tackle on the first team offense, I believe. And Simmons was at right tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? I thought it would be the other way around, but I just wanted to throw that out there that he was starting left tackle as of the first day of camp, which doesn't mean squad really has changed so much, but. I think Underwood will maybe get the start. Will crack the starting lineup with the Ticats this year.
I actually have high hopes for him. I think he can be a surprise player. He has that NFL experience, which I know doesn't mean a whole lot, but there's something about him. He's big. He's tall. He's also really fast. Usually, you see the big, tall receivers that might not have the quickness, but he is a fast guy. So. Throw him out there, throw some deep fades his way, and yeah, I could see him putting up some numbers in the Ticat offense this year.
I don't know how he fits the helmet on with that hair.
Yeah, me neither.
Like, he must really like crunch it on there, because I don't know how he does it.
Yeah, it's an impressive high top fade, and very reminiscent of Will Smith back in the Fresh Prince days.
yeah, for sure. That's it for questions, buddy.
All right. Well, with questions over, I guess that means we are done for the day. So as always, you can, if you want to hear your questions on the podcast, hit Mike up on his Twitter box at Mike_Ticats. You can send your questions my way as well. I'm at @JoshSmith_82. You can throw questions in the comments section on the post on 3downnation.com if you want. So for myself, Josh Smith, I guess that's the end of the show, eh?
I believe so. I'm Mike Graham.
All right, I'm Josh Smith.
Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.